Hello there. Today is Thursday, October 11th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a monster storm plows through Florida's Gulf Coast, leaving a path of destruction as it heads north.
It's really the strongest hurricane in that part of Georgia in at least 100 years.
The Trump administration presses Saudi Arabia on what happened to a missing journalist. The Trump administration, as we just said, U.S. stocks plunged on Wednesday.
If it did happen, they would be hell to pay. This hangs over the relationship like a very heavy cloud.
Also ahead, pop star Taylor Swift gets a big award and a new song. Hurricane Michael slammed into the Florida panhandle Wednesday as the most powerful storm to strike the U.S. mainland in 50 years.
It was terrifying, honestly. There was a lot of noise. I mean, we thought the windows were going to break any time. We had the inside windows kind of barricaded in with mattresses. I mean, we did whatever we could, just kind of hunkered down and tried to wait it out.
Florida Governor Rick Scott at an emergency briefing said the hurricane, which made landfall in Bay County, Florida, was a monster. Michael came ashore as a shade under a Category 5 storm, the most intense, with 249-kilometer-per-hour winds.
Hurricane Michael is the worst storm that the Florida Panhandle has ever seen, and one of the worst power storms to ever make landfall in the United States. We heard of significant impacts at Tyndall Air Force Base and many communities along the coast.
But he warns that even as the storm has left the state, residents need to stay put.
We're turning 100% of our focus on search and rescue and recovery. But we need every family to help with this. Listen to local officials. We could still have flash flooding and tornadoes.
American Red Cross spokesman Brad Kaiserman says Hurricane Michael may have caught thousands of people off guard.
It intensified extremely quickly, and it didn't give anyone enough time to do much. And the one thing you can never get back in a disaster is time.
Trees and wires are down throughout Florida Gulf Coast towns. Many buildings have no roofs. Reporters on the ground said they could hear electric transformers exploding. President Trump has been in touch with state governors and says federal emergency teams are standing by and ready to help with storm recovery. Meteorologists say Michael got its fury from the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico. Joining us now to talk about the storm and where it's headed, hurricane specialist Eric Blake with the National Hurricane Center. How would you describe what we saw when Michael first came ashore?
It made landfall with maximum winds of 155 miles per hour and a pressure around 919 millibars just to the northwest of Mexico Beach, Florida.
And when you say 919 millibars, how significant is that?
In the continental United States, if you look at the pressure at landfall, it's the third lowest that we know of, which means a very strong storm. It's the strongest hurricane to hit the continental United States since Andrew, 1992.
That's very close to a Category 5 storm. I mean, we're talking about just basically a couple miles per hour difference. How catastrophic would a storm like that be considered?
This is already expecting to be extremely devastating. The pictures have shown extensive tree damage, extreme storm surge flooding. It's expected to be a catastrophe in many parts of that area of Florida.
What is the latest update on this storm?
The winds are now 115 miles per hour. It's located over southwestern Georgia at this time, moving to the north-northeast at 13 miles per hour.
Is it expected to linger in the area or move pretty quickly? Where is it headed?
It's moving pretty quickly to the north-northeast this time, and we expect it to be moving through Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina over the next day or so. It should weaken to a tropical storm overnight.
Would you say it's still pretty dangerous and will be for a while?
It's still many different hazards. I'm still seeing 5 to 10 feet of storm surge along the coast, and there remains the potential for very strong winds. It's a Category 3 on the wind scale, so that can be significant tree damage. It's really the strongest hurricane in that part of Georgia in at least 100 years. So this is quite an event for that area.
Were there also tornadoes?
I didn't see very many, but when you have a system that's 155 miles per hour landfall, in some ways it's like a larger tornado, because that's the kind of damage where you see snap trees and you think, oh, that looks kind of like a tornado.
Hurricane specialist Eric Blake with the National Hurricane Center. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The president says a former advisor is among those being considered for the UN post. A limo service operator is charged in a crash that killed 20. Canada prepares for legal marijuana, and the U.S. charges a Chinese spy over aviation secrets. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The White House said Wednesday top administration officials have spoken to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman about the mysterious disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, whom Turkish officials say they believe was murdered last week inside Riyadh's consulate in Istanbul. President Trump told reporters on Wednesday he'd talked with officials in Saudi Arabia at the highest level about the disappearance, but didn't say if he knew what happened.
Well, I want to see what happens, and we're working very closely with Turkey, and I think we'll get to the bottom of it.
Trump declined to say with whom he spoke to in the Saudi government, but said it's a bad situation. He said his aides have been in contact with Khashoggi's fiancé, but wouldn't say what, if anything, the U.S. would do.
We have to see what happens. Nobody knows what happened yet. They don't know over there, but it's a very serious situation, and it's something we're taking very seriously. Okay?
Turkish officials say they believe Khashoggi, a critic of Saudi policy who had been living in self-imposed exile in the U.S., was murdered October 2nd inside the consulate when he went there to pick up documents to allow him to marry his fiancée, a Turkish national. Saudi Arabia has called the allegation baseless, but has offered no proof that Khashoggi left the consulate alive. Joining us now is Jamil Jaffer, founder and president of the National Security Institute. What do you make of all this?
I mean, obviously, Jamal Khashoggi, a prominent critic of the Saudi royal family, in particular Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, you know, moved to the U.S. in part because he felt like he couldn't conduct the kind of journalism he wanted to in Saudi Arabia, even though he had lived there his entire life. You know, prominent player. I mean, he had previously served in senior roles with Prince Turki al-Faisal, a member of the royal family. He worked for Prince al-Walid bin Talal. So he had been a prominent, you know, associate of the royal family, but had also been a critic and felt like he needed to move to the United States. The rumor is that he was killed in the consulate by a Saudi hit team, allegedly. And now you're hearing all sorts of crazy, sort of weird stories, like they used a bone saw to chop up his body and the like. So we don't know what's
right.
True here. We haven't seen any photographic evidence, any video camera footage of him going in or out yet, although I dare say that's probably to come soon. So we'll know more as the days move forward. But what is interesting is that the U.S. government, the Turkish government, are all expressing significant levels of concern, which suggests something untoward did happen. The question is what and by whom.
Would it be unreasonable to think that the allegations by Turkey, that Saudi Arabia is responsible for what happened? Is it a reasonable thing to make this sort of allegation?
Well, it would just be surprising to see this kind of thing happen. You know, Mohammed bin Salman has sort of pitched himself as a reformer. I think he's seen as such in the West. You have to know that if you're going to murder a prominent critic, that it's going to come back on you and people are going to suspect you. And so it just seems like an odd move and one that seems out of character for the person that Mohammed bin Salman has been portraying himself as. And then even out of character, you know, for the Saudi regime, I mean, to be sure, Saudi regime and a lot of nations in the Middle East have different laws and different kind of punishments than we think of as appropriate here in the United States. That being said, in no country is it appropriate to lure somebody into your government embassy and then murder them and chop them up. That's in fact what happened here. So it does seem like an odd move, if that's in fact what happened. It just seems at odds with the image that Mohammed bin Salman is trying to cultivate in the West. If it did happen, it's hard to imagine it was planned and orchestrated that way, but that is the claim that's on the table. The claim that's on the table is
right.
This is a planned, orchestrated effort to
right.
do this thing.
Well, they say these 15 officials related to the Saudi government checked into a hotel for supposedly 3 days, went to the consulate, left the consulate, and then left Turkey the same day, didn't stay 3 days. So
yeah.
That in itself seems rather odd.
It does, but what makes you wonder is, why would they have 15 people come in, right? I mean, his squad is not typically 15 people, unless it's a complex operation, and things on this issue just don't seem to make a lot of sense. And yet, the behavior of the Turkish government and the behavior of the American government does suggest there's something afoot here that's concerning to everybody involved.
President Trump, unlike previous presidents, hasn't raised human rights concerns with Saudi leaders. He made Saudi Arabia his first foreign visit as president. He's dramatically restored relations with Saudi Arabia. Mr. Trump seems to be a big fan of Saudi Arabia and the Crown Prince. Do you think that they may have thought that by getting rid of this man that was critical of their government, that because of the newly formed relationship, that they would be more likely to get away with it or not be punished for it if they were caught?
Certainly that might be part of the calculus, but this kind of what's claimed here on the table, right, that the Saudis sent a team of 15 people to their consulate to murder somebody just seems so surprising that it, even if you had a good relationship, it's almost too blatant. It's hard to get away with. And so why you would do it that way, if that's what you're going to do, it just doesn't make sense. And that's why I'm suspicious of the story at the same time.
Well, he's gone.
He went in and never came out. That's right. And that is obviously very concerning. He was a prominent critic. The whole thing just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I feel like there's more to the story than we're hearing yet. You know, there have been rumors that there's U.S. intelligence collection that demonstrates that the Saudis were planning it and that we know that. There's more information here to be had. And the Saudis are apparently not cooperating. They're not allowing the Turkish authorities into their consulate. So we'll see how this thing plays out. But certainly an issue now causing some tension between Turkey and Saudi Arabia, between Saudi Arabia and other nations.
If it turns out that the Saudi government, Saudi leaders, were somehow responsible for the disappearance, the kidnapping, possibly the death of this journalist, what, in your national security opinion, would be the proper response to something so unprecedented?
Obviously, we'd be very critical as a nation of that. We in our nation don't believe that it's right to kidnap and murder journalists. There are dozens of nations around the world that regularly imprison journalists without trial, without charges, and hold them for years. These are not things unheard of in the world. This is not the first time we'd hear of this. It's also the first time, if it is in fact true, that a U.S. ally would have engaged in activities that we abhor. And we would express that abhorrence now. That means we'd cut off ties. Now, how far could it go, right? We could cut off military aid. It could go very far. I think part of that turns on how prominent the world outcry is and how prominent our concerns in the U.S. are. I see Saudi Arabia, a very important strategic relationship for us in the region, has been under both Democratic and Republican presidents. The war in Yemen, as you mentioned earlier, took place under President Obama, and we supported the Saudis, still support them today. I don't see the Saudi relationship dramatically changing overnight, but these kind of things could change the relationship in significant ways. But Saudi Arabia will not stop being an important strategic partner for the United States overnight. What the president is dealing with is that we have a strong relationship with Saudi Arabia, a relationship that he thinks is in our national interest. We don't have a lot of facts right now. If it turns out that we know for sure that, in fact, the Saudis were responsible, well, then that's a different scenario. But right now, there are just, at least publicly, there are no facts other than what we know, that he went into the thing and apparently he didn't come out.
That's Jamil Jaffer, founder and president of the National Security Institute. VOA CEO John Lansing issued a statement saying he is deeply troubled by Khashoggi's disappearance, stressing that no one, especially governments, should be allowed to silence journalists. The director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Christopher Wray, is defending the Bureau's background investigation of sexual misconduct allegations against new Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Wray was asked about the investigation during a hearing before the Senate Homeland Security Committee. He says it was
limited in scope and that is consistent with the standard process for such investigations going back quite a long ways.
Democrats have complained the White House constrained the investigation.
Communications occurred between the White House's Office of Security and the FBI Security Division.
Wray was asked why Brett Kavanaugh and accuser Christine Blasey Ford were not questioned.
I would say what I said at the beginning, which is, as is standard, the investigation was very specific in scope, limited in scope.
Wray declined to answer a question about whether the FBI investigated whether Brett Kavanaugh had lied to Congress under oath. Ed Donahue, Washington.
U.S. stocks plunged Wednesday, with the S&P 500 and Dow marking their biggest daily decline since February, and technology stocks were at the center of the carnage. The Nasdaq registered its biggest daily drop since June of 2016. The Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged 831 points, or 3.15%. The S&P 500 lost 94 points, and the Nasdaq Composite dropped 315. VOA's Victor Beatty asks Gary Huffbauer, non-resident senior fellow, at the Peterson Institute for International Economics what caused this major sell-off.
There are three things came together overnight. First is the rise in the rate on the 10-year Treasury bond, and it has been rising for the last week or two, and this really spooked investors. It broke 3.2%. Maybe that doesn't sound very high, but that's a full percentage point above where it was a year ago.
Why is that a concern, Gary?
Well, that's a concern because bonds are now more attractive for people looking for income than stocks. And so some people, it doesn't take very many, decide, well, I'll shift from my stock portfolio or part of it to a bond portfolio. And it doesn't take very many people to do that to reduce the value of stocks a lot. So that was point one. Point two is that the IMF, International Monetary Fund, came out with a very alarming forecast on the world economy, saying it's slowing down, emerging countries aren't in a crisis now, but they could be there. So that was a pretty gloomy bit of, you know, publicity from this very respected institution, International Monetary Fund. The third thing, which has been looming, is the fear that the U.S.-China trade war is just going to ramp right up and, of course, hit tech stocks and many others as well. So you had all three of those fears coming together, and the stock market is the proof of the pudding.
We've also had multiple rate hikes. In fact, President Trump, when told about what happened on the stock market, referred to the Fed, the Federal Reserve, as making a mistake with its campaign of rate increases. Is that correct?
Well, he has made that statement. This is not the first time, but he really was emphasized with the stock market drop today. And what he's really complaining about is the prospect, which has been there, that the Fed will continue to raise rates. It's not just the September rise, which was there a quarter point. If that was all and they stopped there, I think Trump would be happy and the stock market would be happy. But there's the prospect of three more rises next year by June. Well, that's got the markets a bit spooked. It's not customary for the president to criticize the Fed, but in this case, I think he has something there. I think the Fed is maybe pushing rates too far, too fast.
What investment strategist suggested the market could potentially sell off as much as 10% from its records before advancing once again? As you know, traditionally, October has been a correction month.
Indeed, it has. We've had many black Octobers going back to the onset of the Great Depression. So, yes, a 10% correction would not be out of the realm of historical experience. However, we are entering the earnings season, and expectations are that earnings for these tech stocks, which have been hard hit, will be pretty good. I'm talking Netflix, Amazon, Facebook, Google, all these companies. So if that turns out to be the right, you know, view, then this little correction, well, not so little, you know, it may not be the signal for the big downturn.
But the economic fundamentals in the U.S. are still quite strong, aren't they?
Oh, yes. The economic fundamentals are very strong in the U.S. Really, our economy cannot perform any better than it's doing now. It's still a small number of people who can probably be pulled into the labor market. Maybe about 1% of the workforce additional could come in. But we're growing at over 3%. Inflation is still very moderate.
Trade tensions, is that the big elephant in the room? If it gets larger between the U.S. and China, will that also put a drag on stocks?
Oh, for sure. And I've been saying that for at least 6 months. I guess I'm surprised it has taken so long. But in my view, for sure, a big trade war with China will be very hard on the stock market.
That's Gary Huffbauer, non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Australia is rejecting the latest Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, insisting coal remains critical to energy security and lower household power bills. The IPCC paper says that a rise of 2 degrees Celsius would wipe out the Great Barrier Reef and destroy some of Australia's Pacific Island neighbors. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In its special report released Monday, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said global greenhouse gas emissions must reach zero by the middle of the century to stop global warming exceeding 1.5 degrees Celsius. The authors warned that if warming was allowed to reach 2 degrees, the world would be on course towards uncontrollable temperatures. They made special mention of coal, insisting that its use for power generation would have to fall to between 0 and 2% of current usage. The report has received a lukewarm response by Australia's centre-right government. It has said it has no intention of scaling back fossil fuel production because of concerns that without coal, household power bills would continue to soar. Canberra also insists it is on target to meet its commitments under the Paris Agreement, which attempts to unite every nation under a single accord to tackle climate change for the first time ever. Australia earns billions of dollars exporting coal to China and other parts of Asia, while it generates more than 60% of domestic electricity. Australia's Environment Minister Melissa Price believes the IPCC report exaggerates the threat posed by fossil fuel.
Coal does form a very important part of the Australian energy mix, and we make no apology for the fact that our focus at the moment is on getting electricity prices down. Every year there's new technology with respect to coal and what its contribution is to emissions. So, you know, to say that it's got to be phased out by 2050 is drawing a very long bow.
Australia has some of the world's highest per capita rates of greenhouse gas pollution. A recent government report showed a failure to reduce levels of greenhouse gas pollution. The survey said that between January and March this year, Australia had its most elevated levels of carbon pollution since 2011. Conservationists argue Australia is doing too little to protect itself from the predicted ravages of a shifting climate. It is the world's driest inhabited continent. Scientists warn that droughts, floods, heat waves, brush fires and storms will become more intense as temperatures rise, with potentially disastrous consequences for the environment, including the Great Barrier Reef and human health. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Cassini mission, which provided a close look of Saturn, its moons, and famous rings for 13 years, came to a blazing end on September 11, 2017. One of the highlights of the Cassini mission was the 2014 discovery of geysers spewing jets of icy water high above Saturn's moon Enceladus. A team of scientists led by the University of Heidelberg, Germany, studied data gathered by Cassini and identified fragments of large, complex organic molecules containing hundreds of atoms originating from Saturn's icy moon. Cassini had previously detected smaller, more common organic molecules at Enceladus. The scientists say the existence of these large complex molecules, along with hydrothermal activity on the moon, supports a theory that a massive liquid water ocean below the icy crust of Enceladus may provide a habitable environment for life. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, a superstar performer releases a new single as she accepts an award for career achievement. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition's Sarah Williams with details.
We're going to play a brand new song from the incomparable Taylor Swift, who at only 28 years of age, she has already set a new American Music Award record by winning 4 more, bringing her total to 23 records now, 23 awards, which only Whitney Houston had done before her as a female artist, and Michael Jackson at 24 is the record holder of all time. But Taylor's only 28. So there's a good chance she'll top even Michael Jackson's record. The last time she was on the American Music Awards was 3 years ago, but this past week she was in Los Angeles to open up the American Music Awards with a brand new song off the Reputation album, which I'm going to spotlight for today on International Edition. So with your permission, let's check out I Did Something Bad.
I never trust a narcissist, but they love me. So I play him like a violin, and I make it look oh so easy. Cause for every lie I tell them, they tell me 3. This is how the world works, now all he thinks about is me. I can feel the flames on my skin, crimson red paint on my lips. If a man talks shit, then I owe him nothing. I don't regret it one bit, cause he had it coming.
So has she recorded this recently, or is this just a new single off?
Well, it's a new song off of her Reputation album. The Reputation album's been out a while. Mm-hmm. She has been previewing some new music on her tour as well. So she's got something in the works already anyway. But she's currently on tour for the Reputation album, which won an American Music Award. And she got the big award of the night at the American Music Awards for Artist of the Year. So congratulations to her. She got 3 other awards as well. The Artist of the Year award was the last one of the night. And when she came up on stage to accept the award from Lenny Kravitz, she threw in another little political push to go out and register to vote for the United States midterm elections that are coming up November 6th. She did that about a week ago and created a lot of buzz on the internet, and she's endorsed a couple of Democratic candidates in the midterm election in the Congress for Tennessee, which is where she's a registered voter. And in doing so, the registered voter number has increased.
Huh.
There was an uptick. So it was a gamble because Taylor Swift is typically not political. You don't hear
right.
her say political things, but she did not only in social media, but on stage last night. And it seems to be, you know, there's getting a response to it because she has such widespread influence throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is a role model. She always has been and continues to be. The album is called Reputation. Another thing about Taylor Swift you might be interested to hear. We don't typically think of her as an actress. She's been in a couple of films, very small roles. She's going to have a larger role in the upcoming film version of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Broadway musical, Cats. Taylor herself is a cat lover. She talks about Olivia and Meredith, her two big cats that she loves, and posts on social media all the time. But this time she's going to star in a musical. So far, the only other cast member that's been announced so far is Jennifer Hudson. We don't know anything beyond that. And Jennifer Hudson said recently in an interview, she doesn't have any cats. So maybe she needs to get one.
But maybe Taylor can get her one.
Maybe Taylor can get one for her. Taylor, by the way, is dating a British actor. She has a thing for people from England, from Europe. She's currently dating an actor whose name is Joe Alwyn. He did an interview in a British magazine recently, and he finally touched on the relationship, and he basically said, everybody knows who I'm seeing, and I'm trying to keep this low-key and as private as possible. Please respect us. But the two of them are very much in love, and this has been a long-term thing for her. And, you know, she's dated a couple of, as I said, British actors and American actors and singers.
Well, and I think she kind of wants to keep this one quiet because some of her previous relationships got a lot of publicity and they didn't work out.
Yes, and they end with a song, too.
That's right.
Remarkably. But Taylor Swift, new music, I Did Something Bad. She opened up the show with that song, wearing a black leather outfit, sitting at the piano, then getting up and dancing. She did a great job. It's a new Taylor Swift. You know, she's been on the scene for about 14 years since her first album when she was country music.
Right.
We've all forgotten she transitioned from country to pop, and she's done a great job with it, and she's selling 60,000 tickets every single night for her Reputation Stadium tour. So I love Taylor Swift. I had her on Border Crossings. She's a very nice person, and she's the subject of our International Edition today.
Okay, thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. They say I did something bad. Oh, it feel so good.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show. We thank you for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
This is V.